This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the One Was Had a Dream podcast. My name is Lee Finch, and as ever, I will be joined by Danny Baker. We also have a special guest joining us tonight, and that will be Mark Jones. Danny, how are you? You excited for tonight?
I'm not going to lie to you. Since doing this podcast, our guest is probably one of the people I was desperately wanting to speak about. I mean, I've seen Mark for God knows how long at various guys at football matches, and he might have seen me, God help him. But he was one of the faces, if that makes sense. When you grew up, you always like looked up to certain fans. I don't want to sort of big him up too much, but Mark was definitely one of the fans. I was like, wow, when I'm older, I want to be that. But can I just bring something up right now? And I'm going to bring Mark in, I don't care, your little introduction thing. Can we talk briefly about referees? And I know I'm not linking it over the Sunderland thing, but I wanted just to make a brief point and see what you think about. What is it about football that referees cannot communicate with the public or on so that fans know what's going on? As example, the cricket, if it's a third umpire, everyone knows where they're at and everyone's okay. Rugby's the same. Football, for whatever reason, I watched the VAR, I don't know if it was yesterday or it might have been on the Newcastle game. No one had a clue what's going on. Everyone's in the dark. And I don't understand. Are we at a point now, considering we had a dreadful referee on Saturday, is it time that referees came out and spoke to the fans? Anyway, that's my little rant.
Have you seen a referee in Australia? They do it.
They've all mic'd up. That was excellent. That guy was excellent.
And that was the guy who refereed us against Arsenal in the...
That's right.
Yeah, and he was awful in that game. So, yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't communicate. What I'm saying is he can be rubbish. I'm not slagging off the stats.
There was a point, I think Mike Dean came out and said, if they communicated, then you're only one side are going to actually agree with the communications, whatever the decision is. There was a reason why they don't do it in football.
But if you go back to last week's pod, when everyone obviously must listen to it, the one thing that Charlie said was, having somebody to communicate with, at least you've got an understanding of where a person comes from. But also, as it happens, the decision, like with rugby, people very rarely get frustrated with rugby because you hear the rationale of decision as it goes.
Danny, you can only communicate really at the highest level because they've got VAR and stuff like that, so they can watch it again and say this
in the game. Really.
And that's the same as rugby. But in League One, we don't have that. So he can't communicate and go, I just didn't see it.
No, but he can after the game. He can go, right, you know what? These are the decisions that were made. I mean, it'll be funny.
I disagree with you.
There was 12 yellow cards on Saturday.
Yeah, but that referee's, if you looked at the referee's record previously, his record was booking, he books people funny. He's only just been promoted to League One as well, so he's got trying to point to prove he's a young ref.
Why can't they communicate?
Anyway, let's bring Mark in.
Yes, if we've already bring him in. Mark, thanks
very much for joining us. How are you? You all right?
I'm good, thanks, mate. Yeah.
Refereeing, Mark. Go on.
I was waiting for my yellow card, to be honest. I got mine when I got in. The missus, like I normally do after going to play our lane. But do you know what I found? I agree with you. Bits I've heard with rugby refereeing and referees that are mic'd up and the fella that we had for Arsenal. It's interesting. But I think I've seen it when it's not been a game that I've been involved in. You know, it's not been my team. So yeah. I think it's like Lee makes a good point that if he said, I've given that yellow card because I thought he went in over the top of the ball, and we're all sitting there 2 yards away and going, well, he didn't. I don't know if that'll make me feel any better. I think it, and we're also, don't forget, we're probably thinking about games you've watched on TV and heard it. So I think in the stadium, maybe it wouldn't work. I do like the idea of hearing from a referee after a match, you know, or even maybe, you know, the referee's assessor should come out of it. Because I tell you the bit that's really crazy is the amount of times, because I'm sitting in the West End quite near the dugouts, he's seen our dugout and the Oppo dugout like non-stop on the fourth official, I guess that's what they're called now, right? Assistant, whatever yeah. it is. You know, the fella that's standing there.
And the I'm assistant like, to the assistant.
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know how much value there is in that. I don't know whether that gets conveyed. Apparently, they're mic'd up with the referee. So I think there is, the thinking behind it is that you, if you're going to say something to the referee about a decision, and obviously the most obvious one for us is, are you getting booted up in the air, 20 foot in the air every 10 seconds?
Yeah.
And I think saying to that guy on a touchline, when is the referee going to do something about that? Maybe they're expecting him to say, ref, you got to do something about it. But is the referee listening to him? Is he listening to anybody? You know, the amount of times you see Oppo managers getting in the ear of that guy trying to get into the referee, I just don't know. I don't know whether that makes any sense at all. Do you know what I mean? It's with them all wired up. I know, as I say, apparently that fella is wired up with the referee and they communicate. But
I agree with you, Mark, regarding coming out after a game and saying why, like if they've been interviewed after a game and saying, why did you make that decision? And then they can say, yeah, this is the reason. But again, I think it only works at top level. I don't think you could drop it down to League One, League Two and say why they made decisions, because the referee against Sunderland literally made, what, hundreds of decisions? Yellow cards left, right and centre. And the one thing I was happy about with the Sunderland game, going on to that, is I love the fact that Rob Tovey and all them just got right stuck involved and had it right off with them.
But it is difficult.
Yeah, I spoke to Robbo after the game briefly because he walked through the pub. He's not in there a lot, but his missus was in there and he had some family down and he came in there. And I said to him, like, you know, it was very different from you today, you know, on the touchline, because he's a fairly passive fella, isn't he, on the touchline?
Yes.
I remember years ago him saying to me, and this isn't me trying to go, my mate Robbo, by the way, it's just, you know, he's not hard to bump into, right?
My mate Robbo, yeah.
Well, he's not hard to bump into, right? He doesn't know either way, Mark, so you can get hold of him if you've ever sort of had the privilege to sort of speak to him. He's a very honest and open fella, you know, so, and I said to him, like, that wasn't like you, and he said, do you know what is really driving me mad? Like, and more about, and he said this in interviews, we're a team that are good about quick transitions, right? That's when we first few games of the season, turnover and then pace into the final third is what was absolutely slaughtering the opposition. And they've sussed it now. So every time we take possession, we just see one of our players fly up in the air. And a bit that was interesting about the Sunderland game is they passed that around the team. The minute one of them got a yellow, they just stood off. Then the next player went in and had a dig. And so there's two things there. It was like, that's professional, cynical football fouls, right? But they work. They work against us week in, week out. And maybe that's one of the reasons why we're getting fans frustrated with the young side. Because an 18-year-old kid don't know about that.
Yeah, we're naive.
They ain't going to do that.
100%.
You know, they're not going to do that. And I don't know whether you teach them that or not. I don't know whether you say that. I tell you, having said that they're naive, it really does. And you watch this next game, you're at the amount of times we pick the ball up after we've given a free kick away and jog away with the ball and then throw it to a different player than the one who wants it and tap the ball out when it's, you know, when it's their throw, not ours. There's a lot of that goes on. So I don't think we're super sort of naive. Do you know what I mean? We're not playing like, you know, Green around the Gills players. We used to. You both remember when we played under Neil, we used to run around saying how we were top of the fair play. It used to drive me mental.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm like, yeah, we're bottom of the table, but we ain't had a yellow card. Maybe the two are connected. Do you know what I mean? I don't think we're sort of like super, we're not super daft and green around the gills in that sense, but it just seems to be that very cynical opposition get away with a lot against us. And I think that's what you saw Saturday, and I think that's why Robbo was doing his incredible Hulk impression on the touchline.
I think you're right. The only player I think who's got it in him is Asal. He's got that little bit of, he'll stand in front of the ball, he'll bring people down or he'll get involved. Where there was a goal, I think, a couple of weeks ago where we should have brought the player down on the halfway line, took the book in, and then just allowed him to go on. But then talk about the Sunderland game. McCormick picks up a second booking, which is stupid. Asal picks up another booking, which again, he dives, and it's ridiculous to pick up booking. And if he hadn't been booked, everything would have been wiped. His bookings would have been wiped on Saturday.
Is it after that game?
Yeah, after that game, his bookings would have been wiped.
Oh, no.
So as much as you love Asal, but you've got to think, come on, mate, like, don't be getting booked. You've got one more game and then you're not going to get a suspension. We're missing him now for two games, isn't it?
The going over easy is the only yellow card that really drives me mad as a football fan and as a Wimbledon fan. Because I'm like, stay on your feet. Like, I want us to get kicked and stay on our feet and say, you know, I'd like the idea that you boot you up in the air and you jump back up and go, is that it, mate? Because I'm going to go past you again in a minute. So you're going to have to get used to kicking me. But when, you know, I don't think that we've got players that simulate. I don't think we've got out-and-out cheats. We ain't got, like, you know, Gilolo is the most famous version I can think of. That's how old I am. But, you know, like someone who was constantly looking to go to the ground or Limpar at Everton. But
Klinsmann, yeah.
You know, in the modern game, I think players are coached. If you get a touch, if you think the ref will give it, don't stay on your feet. You know, I've even seen sort of pro footballers that you wouldn't expect to be that sort of player, so almost make excuses for that. You know, there was contact. For my money, I'm like, I'm not bothered about the pen because you could have scored the goal if you stayed on your feet. Yeah. No, most of the time you'd expect to score a pen, but that's if you get it given. We're starting to see players getting yellow cards, you know, going over with a touch. I don't think they're just leaping up in the air wearing swimming trunks and a pair of goggles, but they're getting a touch and going over. But now referees are starting to give yellow cards to our players going over. I'm like, just stay on your feet.
I mean, the sales on Saturday was pathetic, though. I mean, I was standing on the south stand and that just looked like a dive all day. It was ridiculous. And the worst thing about it, as Mark said, he actually was on his feet. And he could have quite easily, I know we were a bit desperate, he could have gone back, made a cross or done something. And he just went flying over. But I wonder whether that's why he gets so booked, Lee. The fact that he is one of the only guys who has got the ability to get under people's skin and charge and hunt. And he's got a bit about him. He's literally the only one who does it. Him and Woodyard. That means that he gets booked a lot, I don't know.
What I find mad about Asal is that it seems like all the refs have already got his name. And number in, like, he's gets fouled left, right, and center.
It is mental.
Robbo, I know Robbo's mentioned it before, and he gets absolutely booted around, don't get nothing. He makes one little challenge, and then it's boom, straight in the book. And it's like, how are all the referees like aware of this already? They must be chatting and stuff like that. But going back to the Sunderland, Graham, I didn't watch the game, but I heard Cosgrove played it well. And
every single week, and again, I don't know what Mark thinks, but I feel like the progress made from the Boar and Wood game, every game we've just got a fraction better and we're getting better and we're getting better. It was good to see Cosgrove. He seemed quite mobile, seemed quite happy to link in with players. And again, we seem to be great everywhere in the pitch but the two boxes. I just felt that going forwards, we finally seem to be linking players up. Playing, you know, I thought we were as good as Sunderland on the ball and moving around, but didn't make a huge amount of chances. We had Asal had a shot that was going in the corner, the keeper saved it, one at the far end, obviously the penalty. But we do a lot of really good stuff, but that killer thing that we need to do, which is scoring goals, we just don't quite manage to do that. But we're definitely moving in the right direction. And I thought it was a wicked game of football to watch. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I have watched a lot of the games this year and really enjoyed it. And Sunderland was just nice to be able to come away from Sunderland and go, we were competitive and we were equals. I mean, Sunderland, it was just, yeah, it was absolutely. I really enjoyed it. I don't know what you thought, Mark, but I thought the game was great.
Yeah, it was one of those games that the further away you got from it, the more you felt like we should have won it.
Yeah,
I think at the time it looked fairly even. And they've got decent players. I think they've got decent individuals. I think they look like a great side. I think we should have beaten them. I wanted to beat them. I felt we were going to beat them. Because as you said, I feel like it's, we're getting our mojo back now. It feels like it's going back to what we were like before. That break murdered us. That all those COVID games that got called off. The Wickham game away, that was us absolutely firing on all cylinders. And then that sort of cold shower of not playing football matches. Just totally sort of like lost our way. It's interesting because there was a lot of talk from people saying, and I was one of them at the beginning, of like, we haven't played for so long. Why are we so poor? The Oxford game was dreadful. It's as bad as I've ever seen us play a game of football.
Yeah.
And the thing with that was, again, I managed to get through to Mark and ask Mark, and he was like, we haven't prepared, we haven't had that time to train. Because what we've done is we've recovered from a game, we've prepared for the next match, we've worked on set plays, we've worked on, you know, shape against a particular opposition. Then you taper off, then you don't play to get ready for the game. Then the game don't happen. So then that's another hour and a half that you've missed. Yeah. You know, that's another, you know, that's fitness levels dropping. Then go again. And the same thing happened again and again, didn't it? So it was almost like, you know, last thing you said to me this week was, I'm looking forward to a full week before the next match.
Yeah, but
you know, where we know what's coming on Saturday, we know we're playing, we know what we've got to do to prepare. And I think I can't make Saturday. I've been to most of the games this year. I can't make Saturday. I'm pretty certain we're going to go and get the 3 points there.
What are we missing, Mark?
Be about right for me.
What are we missing from that? I feel like me and my dad were talking about it. I feel like we're 80% now. I feel like we've got so much going. I've been massively impressive, Osu at right back. I think he's been, I mean, I know he's not a great fan, but I really do rate him. I think he's been awesome on right back. He's been quick. On Saturday, I thought he was exceptional, to be honest.
Right.
But I just feel like we're just, I don't know what it is. And it's going to, I feel like there's like a switch that we haven't pressed yet. And when we press it, we're going to go. And I think a couple of teams could be on for a bit of a kicking, to be honest. But the concern, obviously, is obviously missing a Sal for Gillingham in particular. Bolton, I think we've got a good chance. They lost to Burton yesterday. But missing a Sal for Gillingham is pretty big. But I think these next three games are going to be huge. If we can beat Donny and beat Gillingham, I think you can almost write off a lot of teams. But I feel like, I don't know what we're missing. What are we missing, Mark?
Can I just quickly say before, because Danny tried to throw me under the bus there saying Osu.
Matt, you were just doing this. You were like trying to do that like cut face for Osu. He's been brilliant.
No, I love Osu. I think he's brilliant, but he's very, very inconsistent. You don't get any middle ground with Osu. He's either really, really good or he's really, really bad.
So me saying he had a good game Saturday, what's wrong with that?
I just, you were saying about how good he is. He's very inconsistent. That's all I'm saying.
He's allowed. He can be good and inconsistent, can't he?
You know what I mean? Anyway, Mark, what are we missing? Good.
Yeah, Mark.
Just quickly on Paul. Right? I think Paul got in the side, did well, got very comfortable in the side. And I'm not saying he went to his head and he lost the plot. I think he kind of like, and maybe he'd even say it himself, I think he switched off a little bit. I think he got used to being picked. He came out the side. Came back in the side, playing on what most people would call his wrong side. You know, there's some interesting stuff out there. If you ever look at managers that intentionally flick fullbacks and play them opposite side so they can cut in rather than go round players. But I think he's come back in the side, and I think he's been one of our best players. In terms of does he look consistent, I think a lot of that's down to whether people double up on him and whether teams have somebody in front of him that he's one of their better players. Do you know what I mean? You've got to think of the sort of difference in caliber that we face in this league.
Yeah.
You know, some of the top sides are just like ludicrous, like ridiculous.
Well, Sunderland had Patrick Roberts, who cost Man City 14 million like 3-4 years ago. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the levels.
Yeah, where you came from.
We know about that.
But that's right. What I mean. That's the levels exactly. You're talking about, Mark. I think 14 million, what, 4 or 5 years ago?
So I think, you know, in terms of what's missing, my big one, and I've been saying this, I'm a broken record on this, and I think it fits in with having a young side. I think it's confidence. I think it's arrogance. It's confidence. You know, my eldest lad, who's like 26, 27, the reason why I say his age, because he's seen, you know, he'll talk about John Main, and he'll talk about Kedwell, and he'll talk about from that era on.
Yeah.
And he, you know, and then obviously he gets the best of Lowell Taylor, who's probably the most perfect example of an arrogant footballer, right? In the way that if he plays for the opposition, you want to see him like put in the stand. The minute he signs for you, you're like, now he's our arrogant bastard. Do you know what I mean? And is that, you know, we all know that famous goal celebration at King's Meadow of Lyle running down the touchline, you know, like, this is our house, this is our house, that sort of attitude. That's the sort of thing that we had in the first like 8 games of the season, just because of how well we were playing. So it kind of bred an arrogance that was possibly more about confidence. But I like us to be cocky. You know, young people should be leery, cocky, and think they're better than they are. That's what being a teenager is all about, right? You think the dog's bollocks even when you're not. And we've lost a bit of that. It's almost like we've crashed down to earth with some of the results we've had. But I, you know, Shrewsbury away was the first game for me where I saw the sort of the colour run out of our cheeks, you know, and like I was desperate for Rudy to take people on. We were sort of, we were coming up short. We weren't sort of trying to go round people. We weren't trying to play quick triangles around people. That's when we looked like a good Wimbledon side and a different Wimbledon side to what I'm used to, by the way. But and it was interesting as well, listening and reading about people talking about, you know, I'm a Wimbledon fan and this is what I expect to see. I can guarantee you Mark Robinson knows what Wimbledon is about.
Yeah.
In a way that Neil Ardy never used to, right? So I felt like Neil, this isn't Mark versus Neil, by the way, but I think it is two contrasting eras. I think with Neil, he wanted a different era. He wanted to play passing football, but he almost wanted to bury the past. Partly, I think, to be his own man, to not be ex-Wimbledon player. Neil Ardley gets a go at being manager, you know, and then we had Wally do the same, and then we had Glyn do the same. There's none of that with Mark. So, but I've always said to anyone who's hero I can get hold of, there is a Wimbledon thing, right? If you're a West Ham fan, you talk about wanting to play a certain sort of football. You expect to play a certain way.
Yeah.
Man United fans recently talking about this isn't a Man United side. So when we talk about, and everybody thinks that, but when we talk about it as a Wimbledon side, I don't think it's elbowing people. I don't think it's booting them. I don't think it's having lunatics in the side. It's definitely not about a long ball back to front, because otherwise that would have gone straight over the top of Robbie LZ, and he's the best player I think we're ever going to see in a Wimbledon shirt. I think,
agreed. Yep.
You know, that's, I don't think you can argue that. I mean, he was just different gravy.
Yep.
And for me, it's about pace and it's about aggressive, forward-thinking football. And if you think about this season when we've done well, that's what we've played like. You know, we've had those fast transitions. We've moved quickly against sides. There's been that kind of relentless attack. You know, like when we're on the ball, that high press, that, you know, when we close teams down and go, you know, a game recently at Plough Lane, it's the first time I can remember in decades of seeing people get on their feet. When Ayoub was getting on the ball, people were standing up. I'm talking just over the halfway line, not edge of the area. And I'm in the West Ham, right? Most people in there are on life support. Do you know what I mean? I go in there. Feel
you go there to feel good.
Yeah, I go there to feel young and vibrant, right? and feel sorry for my son who I've put in there. And he like longingly looks up at the omen with it all going potty. And I think he just thinks, I should have gone in there, which he can do. He can move next year if he wants, if he'd prefer that. But you know, like people were getting to their feet when I was getting on the ball, because I think they were like, here we go, this is it, this is it. And I think that's what's missing. And having a centre forward now who can hold the ball up, who can do a little bit of dirty work, and who can have a little bit of a presence up there, you know, he's a big fella. I think, I know that sounds strange, right? But it's almost like a fight in a pub. And like, you know, you've got a range of like little young kids who can all think they can put their hands up. But all they need is one big brother with them who's 6'4", who walks to the front, and all of a sudden everybody thinks they've got half a chance in that bar fight, right? And I think that's kind of like the sort of football we play. Now we've got that. And I'll be honest with you, I don't even think that was Ollie Palmer, right? He looked like it, but that Ollie Palmer was the most deceiving footballer in terms of what you saw when he stood on the pitch at Plough Lane and did his little through his hands, do you know what I mean? And
yeah, shirt I totally agree like, with this.
Here we go, Wimbledon number nine nutcase. He was nothing like it. Two good feet, good footballer. I don't think he was great in the air. I don't think he beat people up. He totally went missing at Boreham Wood. If he was a loony like that, he would have smashed Boreham Wood up, right? Or he would have tried to. I don't think we saw anything out of him at Boreham Wood. I think if we play Boreham Wood next week, I think we give him more of a game this side that we've got now with a different centre forward. Because I think he looks like he likes the dirty stuff a little bit more, you know, like getting his hands dirty rather than kicking.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. Because I watched Cosgrove play for Aberdeen, and the Cosgrove that played for Aberdeen was one that would play against Rangers, Celtic, and the big teams up there, and absolutely go in and go, I'm going to smash every single one of these. None of them are going to get near me. If you try and win a header against me, you're going to be on the floor. And he'd go up there. And I don't think it's worked out at Birmingham. But I'll make you right. I think you're right with guys. I'm one of these people that Wimbledon FC was everything to me. I loved it. I loved the fact that we had Robbie Elwes, £100 million footballer in today's market nowadays. He was the best footballer I've ever seen. Also loved the fact that and this is as close as I think we're getting to it, that we're picking up players now like McCormick's and things like that. Or Chelsea are saying, nope, you're not good enough. And then we'll go, come and play for us. Come and like Chris Perry's and the Blackwalls and people like that who got released by clubs and said, well, come on, come train on concrete and make it as a professional footballer. And I think we are getting closer to that with what we're doing with the younger players coming in and getting. Ayo Bassel was released at Millwall because he weren't ever going to make it, and now he's a League One footballer. I think that's as close as we're going to get.
It feels like we've actually got some understanding now as a club of what does a Wimbledon player look like. You know, when we talk about...
Agreed.
You know, something struck me earlier on, right? I listened back to a couple of your podcasts, and it was a bit of a theme coming on, and it was a fair theme. And we spoke about this before we sort of went on air here about if you're of a certain age, right? I mean, I first went in 79, and I went one game that year, and we won it, and I thought we were decent. We got relegated. I didn't even know we got relegated. You know what I mean? I went back to setting fire to trees and doing all sorts of stuff. Do you know what I mean? At that age, I didn't go back to watch us till we went into the second division for the first time. But I watched the team go from the second division, hung around for one season, then that was it. Then the rocket was lit, and we were gone. We were on the moon, right? All the way through to the FA Cup, then in the Premier League. I've seen this win at Anfield. I've seen this one win at Ivory. I've seen this win Stamford Bridge. I've seen it smash the living daylights out of the so-called best teams in Europe, right?
Yep.
You know, from the cup final on. So I've been spoiled rotten. Then you go through to my eldest son. He saw the rise back in the league, Danny Kedwell, John Main. He saw players scoring for fun. He saw us like absolutely buzzing. He didn't get the added spice of a home ground, because I don't think Kings Meadow felt like that. Even if you loved it, it weren't, you know, however bad we're playing at the minute, it don't compare to Plough Lane, right? We'll get on to that separately, right? Because I was saying to people, you wait till we've got our own ground, right? And I was right. We'll get on to that bit. But my youngest son, I remember him going in his first few weeks, going to me, Dad, why are we so shit? And I was like, I feel for him because he don't know. You know, I can show him Robbie. I've seen him Robbie L YouTube stuff. I might as well be singing him Stanley Matthews. He's like, what year was that? Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, I'll give you a great example. If you think of that era, you put a film on, when we're all sitting around the telly at Christmas, and I'll go, watch this, Trading Places, it's brilliant. I'll put it on and they'll be like, I ain't watching this. But what's this shit? You know, like, it looks so dated and so right.
The recent one was the Super Bowl halftime show. They bring out, like, Eminem, Dr. Dre, and all these youngsters are going, who are these guys? Like, who are these old men? And it's like, well, these are some of the best rappers of, like, our time. You look 10, 15 years ago, they were unbelievable. Now, all these youngsters are going, why are they bringing out all these old people to sing, like, Mary J. Blige? Who's that? You know what I mean? It's like,
Mary J. Blige?
That's what the young people were saying.
I thought you had another pronunciation issue.
He's in character. He's in character.
Talk me out, Dan.
Yeah, so what we've got, right, is we've got a very unfortunate, at this stage, group of fans, you know, like, because it was like when you were talking about do fans care about being fan-owned, blah, 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 blah. There's a very quick shortcut to that, right? Don't matter whether you're a fan-owned until things go really badly wrong, right? It's, if all you think of it is break glass in case of emergency, the fans own a football club, you can forget about it. I took a mate Saturday, right? He was a Liverpool fan, grew up in Wolves, but his nan was a Liverpool fan, so he went to Liverpool and he goes Liverpool, like, he's proper. I took him Saturday. His brother was with him and his brother's kid. His brother's kid, he's been scouted by, he's seven, he's been scouted by Chelsea. And I'm like, I'm not having that. I'm getting him into Wimbledon. So he went to the game. They lost their minds. Every single bit about the day was just unbelievable to them. The pub, let alone the fact the manager walks in the pub after the game, right? But the little kid goes there, sees the one ball. We walked in there, right? And I said, look, go round the back and you go and do a little penalty shootout. But before we did that, I said, come with me a minute, come here. And we got to the top of the West End steps, right? And I said, come and have a look at the ground. And you know that Bobby Robson quote about you fall in love with a football club when you walk up the steps and see the pitch? His face was just unbelievable. This is not a Wimbledon fan. I mean, I think he might be now, but this is just a little kid coming to football. It was like he could have been walking into anywhere. Could have been Wembley. Do you know what I mean? It could have been the Emirates. To him, that was like, this is unbelievable because it just looks so good. So in terms of that fan owned, I always say like this, at the very end of the day, I turn around and said to them, we did this and we own it. It's not going to catch people and make them go to football. It's the final bit. It's the bit where you're going home in a cab at the end of the night and go, and guess what? We own that. We built it ourselves. That's what it is. So we're fan owned. Ain't going to get some geezer who lives in the middle of Mitcham don't care about Wimbledon at all. He ain't going to see that and go, oh, we'll have some of that. Unless he's a particular type, right? Unless he's proper groovy and that's his thing. And he'll know anyway, right? So those fans are coming along and they're watching a transitional period of the club. You know, and I say to my boy, when we do something mental, you are going to feel so much better for going, but I was there when we weren't like this. Yeah, I watched us go to that. Do you know what I mean? And the same as people who, by the way, went when we were in the CCL. It used to blow my mind. I'd look around and I'd see kids there and think, what are you doing coming here? What do you want to see Sandhurst Wimbledon for? Or Chipstead v Wimbledon? Like, why aren't you going to Stamford Bridge? Because it appealed to them, because they felt part of it. When I first went to football, I went to Wimbledon, I went to Fulham, I went to Millwall, I went to Chelsea, and then I went, nah, I'm going back to Wimbledon. Because it was just something about it. I was like, I don't just want to be like one of them. Do you know what I mean? This ain't talking to me. I don't know what it was. I don't know whether I'm just a bit kinky. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, I'll go and watch us play. I'll go, you know what I mean? I want to go and watch Alan Court play football in the second division rather than going to see Chelsea. By the way, we're probably in the second division when I saw him anyway. But, you know, so to wrap all that into one big thing, fan ownership, are we any good or whatever, you know, and listening to your podcast and other ones where people are all like, we ain't very good to watch. You know, it's a bit, you said, mate, it's like, I didn't even want to go Saturday. I was like, I can't be arsed. It's terrible. And I've got to admit, right, upset me a bit. I was like, really? Is there nothing there for you other than just the game? Because it's weird. For me, what we do on the pitch is like the little cherry on the top of the pie or the top of the cake. You know, it's like, I have a blinding day out at Plough Lane. I meet my mates in the pub. I walk down Avons Road. I go and have a pint or two in the ground. I know it ain't never going to get taken off me. I know no one's going to build a supermarket on top of it. So I get that. I understand that we'll have people who are turning up just to see us win games, right? And they've got every right to do that. Because if we're going to be successful, we have to have all shapes and sizes in that stadium. Yeah. From the right-on shop steward who can't get enough of politics and people power, all the way through to some bloke who was just passing by and thought, I want to go and watch a bit of football. Maybe we're just, you know, I think we're doing really well as a fan base to stick with what we've got at the minute. You know, this run we've been on, like, the support is unbelievable. And the players know that, by the way. The players and the management know that. They do know that we're being patient. But for me, I'm being patient for one reason. Because I think shouting and screaming at a kid ain't going to make him a better footballer. And I want him to be a better footballer. You know, we went to Accrington and went potty on purpose. We were like, even if we lose, everyone was there. It was like, we obviously we'd had a couple of drinks. But we were like, even if we lose 4-0, let's go mad for the whole night. Let's just give it to them and see what the players are at like. You know, like, imagine that. Sitting on the way home going, we just got smashed 4-0 and they're still going potty for us. Like, and then they're going to go into training on a Monday or Tuesday and put it in. Do you know what I mean? They are going to put it in. There is something happening. If you was at Charlton, Woody came and meet at Charlton. And he can't stop talking about the fans. He's like, fans are unbelievable, mate. And all the fans did was walk up to him and say, you're unbelievable. It's like, I know it sounds like super groovy, but it is like, it's a ball of love. Well, and it's easy to not spot it, do you know what I mean? And go, oh, we were terrible Saturday. You're entitled to do that. Saturday night, I'm the first person to go, he was terrible. He should have been dropped. I don't know what he's doing at right back. Do you know what I mean? How did he not put that chance away? What's he doing diving? How did he get booked? But by Monday, Tuesday, it should start to fade and you get buzzing for the next match. Do you know what I mean? And that's what I was saying to you about, you know, your little bit. And I know I'm ranting now, but you did give me a soapbox. So I'm going to jump on it and talk, right? But listening into your podcast, I'm like, number one, you ain't wrong. You're allowed to think that. There ain't no right and wrong. It ain't, if you ain't into being in the trust, then you shouldn't be at the football ground. I'm more than okay with someone going, I don't care left, right, or centre. Let me give you a very, very simple stat, right? Out of my immediate family, my brother, my nephews and all that, there are 9 of us at season ticket holders. I'm the only one that's in the trust. And I don't ever try and make them join. I don't try and sell it to them because it's almost like a little experiment. I want to see when they think they should or shouldn't be in it. And it might well be. It don't matter if they're in it or not. Don't matter. They bought the benches. They buy season tickets. They buy beer there. They buy food at the ground. They buy a shirt. They're supporters. They're as much of a supporter as anybody that's in the trust. The difference is that the trust are there as the owners. They're our own. We are our own Roman Abramovich. Do you know what I mean?
Well, just on that, though,
self-determination is important.
Can I just jump in on that one point that you said? You said about
And sorry, Lee, I know you were desperate to say something. I'm just curious on that last point, because I think this is a big thing for me. You were talking about the guys who were doing the Don's Trust and it was great. And you've got the guys who are buying the tickets, doing all the, like, ticking lots of boxes. Surely by doing that, their say should be just as valuable as the guy who doesn't do all that, but just pays 25 quid and get a membership. And I know it's a weird one. Right. I know it's very difficult to quantify, but I just find that that bit I find tricky when we talk about models or votes. I just feel that that guy who went to Accrington away, bought the shirt, bought this, and then you've got the guy who lives in the middle of nowhere, just bought it, and he's just got a direct debit that runs over, and that's all his engagement. I don't see how one should have a decent say in how the football club moves on and how the other person is shut off, even though he offers so much. I know it's a impossible thing to work round.
No,
get me around it.
No, I think it's a massively valid question, and I think I've got a bit of an answer to it. I think that by and large, for most of the things that we would expect input, advice or opinion from the fans, it should be from anybody. Season ticket holder, the bench are older, even anyone on a database, right? And what we should do, we should know the difference. So I'm not saying wait the answers, right? But to be honest with you, if someone turns up for one game says, I don't think we should drink beer in the stadium because I'm a Christian and I'm my dad was an alcoholic and I think we should not have drink. And then someone else says, well, I'm a raging pisshead and I only come for the beer and I don't want football. You know, you can start kind of like nasal glazing and getting into some stuff that you shouldn't really ask. But we should know what the fans think, right? We should know. Now, what's slightly changing is, we have had, not many of late, but we have started to see a Don's Trust start to ask questions, right? Just general questionnaires, right? You know, what do you think about this? And I think we should do them all the time. And by the way, every summer we should get a monster one. Like, you know, like 800 page, million questions. What do you think of everything? Like, from top to bottom. And that should go to absolutely everybody because they're all stakeholders, right? And they're all supporters. I think the difference is there are some things when you ask questions that are proper sort of directional changes that has to have a bit of democracy around it. There has to be some sort of platform for it where there are rules and sort of like regulations. Do you know what I mean? It should be kind of, so as a member, you should expect to see all the information given to you, all the data, all the numbers, right? The pros and the cons of all the different ideas. And then you should be asked, which ones do you think you should take? So directional, big directional stuff, should be down to the trust. Now, the bit that's interesting is, when we talk about fan ownership, you ain't never going to change that unless you take over the trust. And I don't think you're going to. So I think Charlie touched on that. And I think sometimes it can sound like a bit, well, fuck you, as a reply. But ultimately, big things like that will only change the trust. Now, there are some things that you're never going to get through because you're never going to get the right amount of members in the door putting enough votes through. Stuff like changing the name of the football club. So, again, we're back to those sort of like different age groups, right? When I designed the AFC Wimbledon crest, it had AFC Wimbledon at the top and Wimbledon at the bottom, absolutely on purpose. Because my plan was always to change the name of Wimbledon and take AFC off the top. So the crest would hardly change, just the top would come off. But if I talked to my two kids and I said, right, we're having a vote, Wimbledon Football Club or AFC Wimbledon, I'd lose in this house because both of them would say, we're AFC Wimbledon.
Yeah.
So you've got, but stuff like that, maybe that's not a great example, but big things like that, changing the name of the club, the colours.
That's a great example.
Who owns the club? I don't think that can be down to the geezer that turns up, spends 300 quid, goes potty, buys a scarf, hat, two shirts for his kids, rosette program, watches a game and goes home. I'm not saying he's not important. Of course he's important. And you make a really good distinction. The guy who's direct debit ticks over, who lives in the middle of nowhere and did it because he thinks we're a good idea, you know, that's a lovely story, that. You then get on to a different thing where how do we then engage those people? How do we get that guy who paid 25 quid and forgot about it? How do we get him to do more than just vote? Because on your chat with Charlie, you made a good point. They didn't all vote for the board, so they're not all engaged. So we've got groups of people that aren't engaged around a football club. So we should be looking to engage everybody as much of the time as we can. But the big structural stuff about ownership and finance and bits and pieces like that should be down to Don's Trust. There's one big standout point here, right? There was a big yellow and blue elephant in the room. We never got asked anything about Plough Lane before they built it. Didn't get asked, did you? I didn't get asked as a Don's Trust member, as a fan, as a season ticket holder, as anything. No one said, do you want three floors with a massive area for selling three-course meals and fine wines? Or do you want a gigantic beer hall? You know, or do you want...
I think we've been fortunate. Remember, the blue and the yellow, and they were like... That's the only thing I remember.
Stupid franchise fans try to pretend that they voted and that's how we got them. Idiots.
Yeah, and for me, that felt a little bit... And a pub name, right? The contentious pub name, right? Which everyone thought they was defeating me. I honestly called it the pub, and I would have called it the pub, whatever had come out of it, right? That was a different point. That was my point about saying people should know who Alan Batsford is, right? Rather than... And we used to have a pub called that. It really, you know, I'll go there every week. I'll go in there every week. But yeah, those couple of those decisions felt a little bit to me like almost like a bit of a token gesture compared to some of the other stuff. I do think it's changing because I know enough people that work for the club now. I'm talking mainly about Bow now, the guy that's been brought in to sort of raise dough. Go on, Lee, sorry, mate.
So I just wanted to wrap it up a little bit now and then we'll come back and then we'll ask you some more questions because
cool, right,
40 minutes, we'll give it a little break and then when we come back, we'll ask Mark some more questions and we'll get right into it again.
The Wombles Had a Dream podcast by the fans, for the fans.
We're back and we're going to be speaking to Mark regarding everything Wimbledon again. I've got a question, Mark. You've obviously told this story 100 times, but Wimbledon, AFC Wimbledon, how did it all come about? I know it was you, Ivar, Trev. If they play on the streets, we'll watch them from the pavements. I know that's been said a few times. But did you ever think, what are we doing here? We're going to start a team from scratch. And how mad has it gone that we're in the Football League, Plough Lane? We've had some great managers, some great players over the years from literally having trials on Wimbledon Common. So from day one, what was the conversation?
Well, this can't be a short answer, right?
Yeah.
I mean, none of them have been short answers, right? This one can't be a short answer. So firstly, it was no single person's idea to start a new football club if we lost Wimbledon Football Club. And everybody knows that Wimbledon Football Club was threatened, its existence was threatened for ages, right? For years and years and years. Dublin, Basingstoke, you know, way before Milton Keynes, there was loads of that, right? So in place, you've got Wimbledon Independent Support Association, who were kind of formed to organise the fans to all protest against all these mad schemes, right? And the bad ownership that we had at the time. Good on the pitch, right? But bad off the pitch. You know, from leaving Plough Lane, because we were going to get a little window where we'd only pay rent and we wouldn't have to pay any ground maintenance, you know, and any developments to building a new stadium that never turned up and beyond. So you had Wizard in place. Then the trust was formed. Now, this is interesting when you talk about why would you join a trust, etc. The trust was originally formed to be that organisation that could be not just perceived, but to be actually better organised and better run and more democratic than a supporters club, right? Than the independent group. So the independent group were the people who would hang off the rafters and go potty and lie in the road and, do you know what I mean? And cause chaos. And then almost like on its shoulder is the trust saying, you know, you've got to try and forget that it was the same people were kind of pretty much with two hats on, right? Yes, I was the geezer who ran across the pitch with a flare, do you know what I mean? And went potty. And I'm also the guy who's trying to have a reasonable conversation with MPs and the like.
Get off the scars, so there was, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, right? So the trust was kind of formed to get a voice for the fans on the board of the football club. You know, most trusts were formed to get fan representation at boardroom level. That's what it was about. So we'd all get together. We'd vote for Lee to be the chair of the trust. And then he would go in the boardroom and sit with the rest of the football club board and talk on behalf of the fans. You know, and a shop steward or a union leader is a perfect example. Someone who would go in there with a mandate of the thoughts and the wishes of his membership and would argue for their rights and for what they wanted. So that was kind of like what we had already in place before the whole Milton Keynes thing got very, very realistic, right, and very lightly. In terms of, so when that happened, right, it was year zero. A lot of clubs, like Bury, have not been as misfortunate, but at the same time not been as fortunate to have that gun put to their head, right? So I've got a mate who's Bury, and he's like, I don't want anything to do with AFC Bury. Like, there's only one Bury. I'm never going anywhere near it, right? And he don't go to their games, and he's been to Stockport and floated around other places with his mates, right? Then I know another fella who's part of AFC Bury, and he's totally like, that's shot, that's done. So we never had that because we didn't have two options, right? There weren't two Wimbledon, whatever a bunch of idiots up there think, right? There weren't two Wimbledon football clubs. They had no intention of ever being anything to do with Wimbledon. Yep. So that was a very sort of like single issue. It was like B&Q on Saturday or Garden Centre, or go and watch a football club playing as close to Wimbledon as he can, being as much like Wimbledon. My own version of, you know, what made me kind of go, let's go for it. We'd had a meal with Sam Amang years ago. A group of us, me, Lee Willett was there, Lawrence Lown, who started Wizza, Xavier, who's obviously now co-chair of the trust. And it was a case of keep your enemies closer than your friends. And he took us for a meal in Wimbledon, and he was like, well, if we go to Dublin, we're all going to Dublin, yeah? And we just literally sat there with him, and we were like,
no.
Yeah, no, we're not, mate.
Read the room, mate.
I'm the father. Yeah, yeah, I'm the father.
Move your elephant around the corner.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the father of the club, and you're the children.
Yeah, I remember that.
So we're moving to Dublin, you're coming with me. And I'm like, no, it don't work like that. I said, like, I'll fly from Dublin to Wimbledon, but I ain't going the other way. Like, how can you not see that don't make any sense? It'd be brilliant. You know, imagine how much fun we'll have over there. It'd be potty. And I was like, yeah, it will be brilliant, but it won't be Women's Football Club. Right? If you want to start franchising in football, if you want to make it like moving the LA Raiders, or, you know, like getting a football, you know, an NFL team and shoving it somewhere else and saying, it's going to be mental, look, we built a big stadium. And because that's literally what it is. It is a franchise, right? That's what ended up happening. 100%. So we said to him at the time, as early as that, and that was Sellers days, before it got really serious. This is Dublin, of course, right? So this is what I'm saying. It's not even as close as
before, yeah.
Milton Keynes, this could happen, right? This is still when it's like a mad.
We generally just didn't get it, Mark.
No. I'll tell you how much he didn't get. Because he said, well, what would you do then? And we said, we'll start another football club called Wimbledon. Yeah. And we'll play in whatever league we have to get in. And it was off the cuff. There was no plans. It was no one's idea. It belonged to everybody. Do you know what I mean? It was just a general musing. It was a bit like, you know, what would you do if you couldn't get home at night? I'm nick a car, right? It was just some sort of like idea that someone sort of said out loud and everyone else repeated it. But he said, oh, if you ever did, well, if it comes to that, I'll pay for it. You can have the money for the football club. I'll set it up. Obviously, we're all still waiting for the money, right?
Yeah, where is it? We've got a stadium to pay for, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, like,
Blau Lane Bond 2 is entirely Sam.
Yeah, I'm willing to. Yeah, I don't know how much money he's got in the bond. He can put it all in there if he wants. Yeah. He must have walked off with about 30 mil, didn't he? Something like that. So we'll have
and he'd done the same at Cardiff.
Exactly, right? So there was everything kind of lined up for it to be a thing. So when it says there were four people that started it, yeah, there were four people that got together in Ivor's factory the day of that decision and said, right, what can we do? How can we do it? But for me, there was a moment, right? And this is probably why I am so happy at Plough Lane, even when we haven't won a game for donkeys, right? Even when we're struggling to get back into the zip and the panache that we had at the start of the season. So after we needed to get a result against Villa at Sellers Park, I don't know how far back you two go.
John Artson, Tintin ran on the pitch, right. Didn't he? Got the shirt, that's all I remember.
Tintin got the shirt and I got arrested, yeah. We both got the pitch. So I think it was about 80 to 150 odd. It was a fair whack of people on the pitch, right?
Yeah.
But I was sitting there like, I don't know, 18 pints of industrial strength lager in, because we'd all been in a Farley before, you know, like nerves jangling.
Yep.
And after we scored that goal, we weren't even after the goal winning, right? After he scored the goal, I went, I'm getting on the pitch at the end of the game. And everyone was like, what are you going to do that for? I was like, I don't know. I'm getting on the pitch. And I just ran on the pitch. I leapt over the ad balls. I went around about two or three, to my memory, two or three stewards. Thought I was doing really well. I'll tell you one thing, right? You'll never get your head around how big a football pitch is till you jump on one. Like, when there's a crowd there, right? I know we've all been on football pitches. But like, you get on, you're like, I thought I'd be at the halfway line by now. I'm still in the penalty area. Then I got crashed to the floor, nicked away and dragged out. So we got put in a cell and I got let out of 14th Nick at about 3 o'clock in the morning. I had no idea where I was. I had a stinking hangover and I was like, right, I'm going to court. I'm going to get a year's ban from every single football match on the planet. I'm not going to be able to go to football anymore. That doesn't sound good. Turn the corner and Sellers Park was there. You know, I had no idea where I was, right? Turn the corner, Sellers Park. And I'm like, well, I ain't going to miss this shit house. Do you know what I mean? I don't care about coming here. It doesn't bother me that I'm not coming to Sellers Park. The manager thinks I'm an idiot. He don't want to know. Do you know what I mean? You had joking here running around at the time calling us all idiots. I'm like, I'm not sure all the players really care about the fans. So why am I bothered? Right? And then I realised I'm bothered because I won't see my mates, was one of them. Most of my mates were Wimbledon fans, right? But also, it's that thing we do, you know, like every week or every other week, we all get together, we all go and have a shared experience, and that becomes like the fabric for our lives. So at weddings, funerals, summer parties, yeah, go on, Lee.
Sorry, I'm just nodding along with what you're saying, it's 100%. Most time it ain't the football, it's, as I said earlier when we were off air kind of thing, it's the weekend in Frankfurt that I had, which is one of my greatest memories of watching Wimbledon, is going abroad to watch Wimbledon play and standing in with under-hatching fans, Offenbach fans, just going mental. And like Charlton on the weekend, all the boys got a boat down to Charlton. Can't remember most of the game, but they literally had memories that will last forever just by being with your mates and being with people that are from all walks of life. But it's that one thing at the end of the day that brings you back, and it's Wimbledon.
Totally right. So I got that kind of like, you know, filmic moment of like, you know, the beginning of act two. And now he's, you know, starts off seeing everyone going potty at football and how much fun they're having. Then you get that bit in the movie script where it goes, and you can't go anymore. Right. As it happens, we got off at court, and I did go. Right. But to my head, I'm like, it made me kind of like zoom out and go, why does this matter to me? What's so great about it? Apart from watching football and that, you know, being behind a football club, right? What else does it mean to me? And how important is that bit of it? And so when it came to your football club's gone, I was running around saying to people, let's go again. Let's just do it again. Let's be called Wimbledon. Let's get a blue and yellow kit. Let's put Wimbledon on it. Let's find a pitch. Let's get 11 geezers to run around behind a ball. And let's all go and have a pint and stand there and enjoy it. And people were like, well, that'd be shit. And I'm like, trust me, it won't be, right? It will be, we'll find something in it. Now, it had to happen straight away, by the way, because if we'd waited a year, it would have been such a hard sell.
The momentum would have died big time.
Yeah, the Sutton game was an outpouring, right? The Sutton game was almost like...
I was going to ask you, Mark, on this. I was going to ask you, what was your expectation before that Sutton game? And what was it like when you turned up and it was absolutely packed?
It had already been mags. We were selling season tickets left, right and centre, and people were like coming in and going, here's 250 quid and we don't even know where we're going to play football yet or who we're playing against, or, you know, people. I'll tell you what it was like, right? It was almost like you've been living at home with your mum and your brother and your old man comes home, beats you up every weekend, right? Beats your mum around the house and beats you and your brother up, right? And I'm talking about the way we were mistreated by owners. And then you leave home and you go and live in an hostel around the corner. You're like, well, it ain't what we had, but it's definitely better.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We're definitely not under the cosh anymore. And that's what I'm saying about that fan ownership thing, right? So forget that fan ownership thing in the original bit of AFC Wimbledon. Because bear in mind, there weren't people running around going, join the trust, it's brilliant, owning a football club. They just wanted football. You know, even Chris, you know, the co-chair of the current trust, I just want to watch football. He didn't stand up and say, I want to form a fan-owned football club that would right all the wrongs and all the ills in the game. And that was kind of like a given and a bit of a side order. He just wanted to watch football. But what he didn't add to that comment was, I want to watch football and I want to enjoy it and I don't want anyone else to be able to stop it being fun. I don't want anyone to take it away from me again. Do you know what I mean? I want it to be mine. So it's about that. I want to find joy and I want to find fun in it and I want it to be safe. And that's what the trust is, right? Trust ownership, fan ownership says, it's good, isn't it? And even when it ain't that great, it's still ours and it can't be taken off of us. That's why it's important. That's why it matters. Because if we chase that, let's be Man City, let's be Newcastle. I saw an article earlier on, Newcastle fans saying, I hope we don't leave St James's Park. How mad is that? They're meant to be one of the richest clubs in the world. And now they're going, you know, if the owners go, well, this ain't big enough, we can't develop this enough, we're going to move 30 miles up the road. It's going to be like Arsenal. We went Arsenal, right? How bad was that?
It was horrendous.
I've never been more disappointed in my life. I was like, every single time we're in a pot with Arsenal, I'm like, get the Arsenal game. Yep. It's 100%. Close. We'll take loads. We'll get dough. I went in there, right? I come home and just, regardless of the result, I come home and just thought, what a shit house.
Hated every minute of it.
It was awful, mate. It was absolutely terrible. I enjoyed it more at Accrington, mate.
Mark, I've got a couple of memories of when Wimbledon first started, well, AFC Wimbledon. Sutton, I walked into Sutton and I said to Paul McMillan and people I was with, I was like, I can't stand this. I can't watch this. I can't come to grounds like this when I've been going to Nottingham Forest and big grounds and stuff like that. And by the end of it, I'm on the pitch hugging some of the players that were playing, and that was it. Loved it. One of my other memories, I think it was a pre-season, and I think it was Dulwich Hamlet or someone like that, and you sponsored the game, and you couldn't believe
that. We sponsored the Sanders game. Yeah, we sponsored the Sanders first game of the season, four of us.
It was about 50 quid for us. Man.
Yeah, including a mate, Paul Willits, who's not with us anymore. Bless him, he never got a chance to go into Plough Lane. Yeah, we sponsored it as the non-league of extraordinary gentlemen, and our logo on the program was no MK, you know, like they'd go MK on their shirts. Yeah, I phoned them up and said we'd like to sponsor the game. And they were like, "What does that mean? Like, have you got a bar? Not really. What have you got? We've got a porter cabin. Can we go in there at half time and have a pint if we sponsor the game? Yeah, all right then. Yeah, I think we paid about 500 quid between the four of us. Might have even been less.
Yeah,
but yeah, no. Originally, right, I've just said, yeah, no, there, and that drives me mad when the players say that in all their interviews. It's catching. Yeah, no. I called out for Rob Tovey. I think you're right. It was fun and it was exciting, but there was a large part of me on that early journey of thinking, right, when's this going to start feeling... It was different to what we had, right? Yeah. And like you, I did want to go to those bigger grounds, and I did want to... I remember saying, I think it turned for me, right, when we started playing teams away and the name of the team was the same name as the train station. That's when we were doing well. Right? So you get a train to somewhere and get off and go, excuse me, mate, where's Havant and Worcestershire sit? You know, and Worcester Source, you know.
Where's my theme 2000?
Right? And they go, I've never heard of it, mate. And then you turn the corner and it was there. You know, it was like the geezer lives next door to me, Dundonakes there. So I think, yeah, there was that outpouring, but yeah, I'm not sure where we got to now.
I had that moment where I was a Wimbledon fan, and then obviously the AFC stuff came along, and I went to the Sutton game. I went with Dad, and bizarrely, the first game of Chipsy, one of the lads at our school, I think he was playing or was involved. And I remember talking to the guys like, this is good, but it's not quite... It's so hard to kind of say it's having an X and then going, oh, it's exactly the same. But I remember the first time I was playing something like Carshalton, which was a team that I kind of knew before.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, now I kind of feel like we're on something, because we weren't playing Merstham or Chalfont St. Peter or Ash or,
Viking Greenford.
It was like teams I could actually like understand and be like, okay, they were up the road from me, so I kind of know they existed. And from that moment on, yeah, I do feel like I'm now an AFC Wimbledon fan, not a Wimbledon fan, which is a big call. But I'm just interested from your angle, Mark, in terms of where you envisaged it back then and where we are now. And is there much displacement in that, or is it kind of got the same kind of ethos that... Because I know you're very modest about this, and I know Lee's desperate to jump in, but, you know, at the same time, you must have created this. You created it as an opportunity, but you must have had aspirations as to what it would feel like. I'm just interested as to, does it have the same kind of feel that you were trying to create at the beginning, or are we now? Have we grown out of what you thought it would be?
No, I think in a weird way we've almost grown into what I wanted it to be. You
know, fantastic!
I think we managed to keep. It's almost like we kept a little flame going on the beach. Do you know what I mean? Like, don't let that go out. If it rains tonight and that goes out, we'll freeze to bits. Right? You know, a bit like when you see these survival things. It's like keep the fire burning, whatever you do. And I think that's what we did, right? We kept that flame flickering along. And some people come along and go, that ain't a fire. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's a little burning ember. And it was kind of like, it kind of is. Do you know what I mean? Who knows where it will go from here? It might stay like that. It might get bigger. It might get bigger and get smaller again. And I'm hoping we don't ever go back down. Do you know what I mean? But so far, it's been just a one-way sort of rise. Even though we've you know, trod water a little bit and started a little bit, you know, in the league. It's weird, right? Because I think if you say something often enough, you can convince yourself of it. And then you start thinking, did I always think that? Or did I just keep saying it to myself? But I was on the Don's Trust board when there were plans for redeveloping King's Meadow and staying at King's Meadow forever, right? There were meetings where the Trust was saying, we can't have a two horse, you know, we can't ride two horses, we've got to pick one. We should pick Kingston, it's more likely. And I was like, no, that ain't happening, mate. Like, even if it takes 100 years, we belong in Wimbledon, we should not do anything at Kingston that stops that happening. So if we'd have gone and built a 10,000-seat stadium, you know, let's say we'd taken over the Athletic Stadium and we'd redeveloped that and then moved in and given the Athletic Stadium King's Meadow. Let's say we'd have done that, right? You're never going back to Wimbledon after that. Too deep. Maybe we'd have sold it to Chelsea Ladies, right? But for me, it was kind of like, let's not do anything that puts a dead end at the end of that road. You know what I mean? It stops us going home. However unlikely it is, I know I haven't got the money. There were people on the Don's Trust board, who I've not seen at Plough Lane yet, but I'm looking forward to reminding them that they said it. They said, well, I don't know about you, Mark, but I ain't got £20 million down the back of my seat, so I don't know how you think we're going to do that. And I'm like, oh, I've got no idea how we're going to do it, mate. I'm not saying I know how we're going to do it. I'm saying we should want to do it. So in answer to your question, did I think it would feel good? Yeah, I know it would feel better than not having a football club, and that was enough. But now we're at Plough Lane. Actually, stop and think about it, right? Yeah, you ain't won for 11 games. Are you bothered? I'm like, I'd rather have won them, but I still can't wait for the next home game. Yeah. I still can't wait to walk over the road, you know, have a pint, walk down Aidens Road and go to the football match. And hopefully we'll win. And I think, again, we're in like a perfect storm. I know I'm now bumbling in other stuff, but we're at the beginning of what feels like, if we're patient and we actually step back and have a think about it, you know, listen to this and then have a little think about what we've got. And it ain't the best, most dashing, exciting football. It ain't got the best results yet. But as we all said earlier on, it's getting better, right? It's getting better by the week. Imagine if it just keeps getting better. You know, like, I remember thinking, start of the season, oh, if we sell out Plough Lane three or four times, that'd be mental. But like, every week now, I'm like, where are all these people coming from? Like, do you know what I mean? It is the archetypal self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it? If you build it, they will come, and they come in.
I think Charlie hit the nail on the head last week when he said that the best time Wimbledon fans is when they're told they can't do something. And I think when we first started in the early years, we always had rivalries. Like, we had Fisher. There was always teams who'd go out and spend fortunes and go, well, you're not going to go up now because we're like, we had Withdean in our league, Wallingford, Fisher Athletic, Bromley, Staines. They all go out and try and spend above us and try and beat it. And then when we got into the conference, we had Luton's, Plymouth, so all these teams at Crawley's and stuff who said, you can't do it. And then when Plough Lane was looking to happen, we had all some residents who said, no, it's not going to happen, the flood, blah, blah. You know what I mean? And now the residents and the local community are right on board with it. And I think when you go to Plough Lane and you look and you see people you've never seen before, I actually love that. I think it's brilliant. There's people where we stand in the East Stand where we try and make it a little bit rowdy and a little bit noise. And they get involved. And that's what I love the most, is people just come in and getting involved. And who's going to go to football and have a Bodine's at half time? Do you know what I mean? It just blows my mind. I know we give the club a little bit of stick, and we can put them down on some things, but one thing I think they have got right is Plough Lane. It's just the pub, the club shop, the food, everything is on point at the moment. It's only going to get better. Go on, Dan.
I think it's good. I mean, the question I had to Mark was, obviously, we've spoken about, it's really heartwarming, and it's really interesting to hear the positivity that you talk about, and your clarity and the message that you're giving us fans. I'm just curious as to, at what point in our journey was you at, hold on a minute, there must have been a moment where you were really sceptical, or something must have happened and you thought, Jesus Christ, we're in the shit here, or is this something that's going to, are we going to be able to do it? I'm just curious on that journey, whether it's now, whether it's, you know, when we first started, what was the moment, your lowest point when you thought, hold on a minute, this is quite tricky? There must have been some.
I think there was a lot of frustration around, when I was on the Don's Trust board, I found it massively frustrating. They were, right, to just kind of like give you some idea about how far away Plough Lane was at that point.
Yeah.
There weren't even a consensus in the room that we should do it if it was available. There were people saying there ain't nowhere, and they were right at that point. There were people saying, how are we going to pay for it? And this, they could argue it's still being proved, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're still looking for money, right? To put the proper light bulbs in where we need them and all that sort of bit, right? But there were people sitting there saying, why should we do it? Like, well, I don't want to be in Wimbledon. I mean, even when Plough Lane got approved, there were people online saying, I'm going to miss Kingsmead. We should have stayed there. I'm like, are you mental? Right. I understand you might not have ever been to a proper home game, right? But the difference between walking into Kings Meadow and walking to Plough Lane is unbelievable, because we are Wimbledon's football club and everybody knows it. Everybody knows it. The amount of people around in Wimbledon now that are getting drawn in, buying season tickets. I'm constantly getting asked, how do I get a ticket, mate? I mean, I'll be honest, I wish I knew the answer a bit easier than I do. We are getting better at that. I am seeing the club now saying tickets available, right? Like Lee's saying, things are improving. And I think even if the club haven't got it right, we're managing to get a few people around the place that are actually listening. So, you know, like the queues are getting better. We've got more beers on offer. Plough Lane ain't going to get any worse than it is. And it's already amazing, right? It's only going to get better. It's only going to get better. So in terms of dark points, I would probably say when I was sat in a boardroom with people who were there to represent the fans, and there were people sitting there around that table saying we should stay in Kingston, or at that's at worst. And then the next stage on from that was, I don't get it. I mean, there were people arguing with me. We had aims, right? We had 10 aims. One of them was the famous mad one of back in the league within 10 years. We did it 9. One of the other aims on there was to return to a stadium, something along the lines of from our original community or something along those lines. There were people splitting hairs over, but what does that mean? Our community is now Kingston. We're a Kingston club now. And I'm like, we're not a Kingston. The clue's in the name. If you want to call us, if you want to merge with Kingstonian, right, and be Kingston United or Kingston Dons, go ahead and do it. I'll give you a little pat on the back. I'll see you later. I'm off. It's not why we did it, right? So that was definitely the lowest point. A lot of stars aligned in terms of what the council did, people at the club moving around behind the scenes, people who were kind of like pushing from their own directions. But it weren't a foregone conclusion that everyone wanted to go back to Wimbledon.
It's must be hard, Mark. Like, literally, you've had a mindset, like you just said, this wasn't what this was about. And it's one of those weird ones. You probably had a little acorn. And as it gets bigger, you've got to have more stakeholders who come from different backgrounds and different ideals and different nationalities, or if you like, and different kind of perspectives. And all of a sudden, it's so easy to see what the straight line that you technically had, it starts to branch and fray. And you know, as you were just saying, you were adamant that we were doing this because you wanted to have a club in Merton. And here you go, 5-6 years down the line, and people are talking about never going back. It must be really hard to kind of stay steadfast and watch potentially the thing that you kind of, one of the key characteristics of why you did it, subtly move direction. That must have been very a very interesting headspace for you.
It was empowering, because there was a meeting where it was a meeting that the Don's Trust had asked us to back, putting in a local community officer to work with schools. You know, I mean, like, this sounds mad now. I'm talking about a person. I mean, the foundation work is mind-blowing, right? DLEG and all that sort of stuff almost seems to have come out of nowhere. And DLEG obviously did come out of nowhere overnight, right? But the foundation, you know, I mean, I don't know if you saw it today, it was a thing today with a load of women that you would never expect to see in a football stadium, all on a tour of Plough Lane, all coming to a game, they're going to come to a game. And I'm like, right. And I'm genuinely, the proper choked me up seeing that. I'm like, this is why we did it. This is why we did it. Because what? Then they were never going to go to Kings Meadow. They don't care about Milton Keynes. Like, they don't care about Chelsea. Do you know what I mean? And by the way, they may well do that in their local community, right? I don't know. But I'm saying what we've got is a club now that is doing that sort of thing. So they said we wanted to start a community officer and we can only get one, so we'll put them in Kingston. And then there was something along the lines of, to the understanding that it would possibly harm our chances of going back to Merton. It was the first public kind of admission of, there are two options. You know, there are two roads, and we've got one car, and it's got to turn left or right. Whereas up till then, we've been going down the road before the fork in the road. You know what I mean? We're on the motorway. We haven't got to the roundabout. We're heading in one direction. We're on this road because this is the road we're on, and then we'll see where we end up. And then we got to a bit where it said, turn left for Merton, turn right for Kingston. And Trust said, we would like you to all vote to turn right. And I was like, this can't happen. It's a similar sort of reaction to what happened with the Plough Lane bomb, the first one, right? Enough people kind of spotted it and went, are you sure? And I went to the South London Press. That's how long ago it was. People still read newspapers, right? But I went to the South London Press and said, anyone who's a Wimbledon fan who's got a Don's Trust vote needs to come to this meeting because, you know, unless you've got absolutely nothing on for the rest of your life, you ain't going to volunteer to go to a Don's Trust meeting, right? They're not, it's not even as good as your school disco, right? They are terrible places to go, right? So I was like, you've got to come to this meeting. And that's the first time that I can really remember where the Don's Trust board got a bloody nose, where the fan said, nope, you're going wrong, right? No, not left, right. So, yeah, I've never really sort of thought about, was it a low point? It was almost like a low point and a high point. You know, it was like Lee said, you know, it was a crisis point. It was...
It's a moment of clarity, isn't it? Like, moment of clarity.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, right? Polarisation. It was like, you know, shit or get off the pot. It was like Kingston or Merton. It was like, well, Merton, right? Now, the difference is, when you're saying about that vision, I never had the answers. That ain't me, right? I make the flag and run down the road and go, follow me. And then when we get to where we're going, I stick it in the ground and they go, oh, did you say we're going to build a fort? I'm like, well, it'd be nice, wouldn't it? But I ain't got no bricks. You know, that ain't what I do. You know, I'm a cheerleader. I'm a gobby. I'm a big mouth, right?
Yeah, you're an engine.
Someone else comes in and does the numbers. Someone else comes in and does the paperwork. I just go, this sounds like a good idea. Do you agree? And that's what's amazing about where we are now and what Plough Lane is about. It's like you've said, all those different kind of like, you know, tiny little rivers moving into the sea. You know, it ain't about four people who started the club. It ain't about one football manager. It's none of that. It's everybody. It's nothing if it isn't everything. Do you know what I mean?
One question before we kind of wrap up, because we are getting on with time. And this is a question that's been asked through a lot of the WhatsApp groups I'm in. But and I don't know the reaction I'm going to get from it from you two.
Lee, we're all in WhatsApp groups, mate. You ain't got to go on about it. Crikey.
Right,
what's that group? What's going on?
Right.
All the rivers, put them into the sea, Lee. Put them into the sea. Mark said it.
Right. Is Milton Keynes the best thing to ever happen to us?
Yeah, dead simple answer. Yeah, totally. Right. You can't. So now I'm going to get really preposterous, right? There's a Steve Jobs talk that he does, right? Look it up on YouTube. You won't be able to find it. It's like an address that he does to a college. And he talks about when he was at school and when he left school and da, da, da. But what is brilliant, it's really good. But there's one bit he says in it where he says he was doing stuff as he went along in his life and he didn't really understand it or it didn't make much sense till he looked back over his shoulders. And you can only join the dots in the rearview mirror. You can't always plot where you're going to go next. Yeah. But you can look behind you and go, oh, that's why I'm here. This is how I got here. And if we ain't in our own stadium in Plough Lane with a manager that, trust me, absolutely adores the place, loves the place, mate, the geezer's a Chelsea fan, home and away. When, you know when that Mark made that comment recently about, yeah, well, fans do get wet? And I know Lee was like, fucking, what's he talking about? And I'm like, as it happens, if he said that to you in the pub, you wouldn't have blinked. You'd have gone, fair enough. I know you would have done. I know you'd just gone, yeah, that's it, mate. It's like, there ain't no game. If you buy a ticket to an away game, you don't come for guarantee you're going to even play decent football, let alone win a game, right? So his answer was a very honest football fan answer. Well, fans get wet at away games, right? It's cold and it's a long way from home. And, right? So I'm just saying that guy gets it, right? So what we've got, if you sit back, again, if you zoom out and you go, what actually have we got? It's different gear. But we got there because of what happened on the way. So if we hadn't have had that, maybe we could stay at Kingston. We might not have got the pressure on Merton. We might not have got certain people. If the Trust didn't say maybe we should sell the club, we wouldn't have got more fans involved and more. And the concept of fan ownership wouldn't have been, again, polarised for everyone to look at in more black and white terms. What does it mean? What doesn't it mean? So you're absolutely right. Did we enjoy it? Did I enjoy my son coming home from school saying, my football courses, Wimbledon have cancelled my football course, we ain't getting a refund. Like, where's my football team gone? You know, I was going to do after school. They literally just stopped it. No money back. And if you just like, oh, no, hang on this week, it's done. That's before they left. That's when they got the decision and they just, you know, they just pulled the ladder up and went, no, Yeah, that's it. They just severed the ties, right? So, yeah, without that three-man commission, we are in a better place than we were. That's why I don't really care about them, and I'm not interested in, I don't even really get into the whole, never forgive, never forget. I'm like, it is what it is, man. Like, where we are now is so much better than where we were.
Yeah, move on. Yeah,
I know we ain't got Robbie L, but we might have, do you know what I mean? Robbie L might be 14 years old playing for us already. We just got to try and hang on to him if we do get him. Or we'll turn into Leo Castledean, right, and go to Chelsea.
Yeah,
well, we might have him.
I got a lot of stick for that comment I made when Robbo said you get wet, because people said stop acting like a wet wipe. But yeah, I get a lot of stick anyway.
Well, so. He did say he was a wet wipe. I know he didn't say he was getting wet. Yes. But it's not a save, right? I saw you act to it, and I know you, and I know that if he said that to you standing in front of you, you'd have took it totally differently, right? No. It wouldn't have been via the medium of the internet and you going, hang on a minute.
This is where I think sometimes the club falls down, is in the commercial side, and not the commercial side, but maybe the correspondences. I think they kind of not stitch Robbo up so much, because as you said, if he's in a pub and someone went up to him and had an honest and said, look, Mark, this ain't good enough, I thought we were shit today, he'd come back with an honest answer. And he's always like, me and Danny have spoke to him a few times. I spoke to him today and he's always honest, and I think he's brilliant. I've spoke to him in the bar many times when he was youth coach and going through the ranks. But I think where he'd love to speak to the fans more, get more fan involvement, like open days and stuff like that. But I think maybe the club, with COVID, kind of ruins it as well a little bit, where we can't get too many people down at training grounds. We can't get too many people down at Plough Lane, like the red zones. Like, as I said, we haven't had any of the CCL boys, the Roman One boys, any of them come down to the games unless they come and buy tickets themselves. Like John Main was around the game the other day, but he had to get... We've not had that where we can celebrate our past as well with regards to AFC Wimbledon and Wimbledon. And I think the correspondence could be better, and I think they could be better with regards to what Robbo's trying to achieve.
I think you're right. I think it is getting better. I know Mark wants to increase those bonds, because if you care about those players and you actually genuinely know they care about you, you ain't gonna scream at Anthony Aitken. You ain't gonna. I mean, I just don't get that at all. Right? Danny. It's one thing screaming at a. It's one thing getting the arsehole with a footballer who's on $4,000 or $5,000 a week and gets injured when he feels like it, right, and goes missing. But that ain't Anthony Aitken, right? So I think it will get better. I think you're right. COVID absolutely battered it, right? All the plans that you might have had, you know, even opening Plough Lane. And I feel for Glyn, right? Glyn's obviously coming back with Donny. You know, that's a geezer with a heart full of love for this football club who didn't get to walk out in front of the fans. I really hope he gets a little stroll on the pitch when we play him and gets a round of applause he deserves. Regardless of how it ended, regardless of his results, regardless of the sort of football we played, he's one of the family, right? And that's what we are. We are a family. And I think sometimes Mark's a bit too honest and a bit upfront, but I think he's got better. And I do think that I will give him a nod here, that without sort of like sending his head too big, I think Chris has done a really good job of interviewing Mark and asking him questions like a fan. And he hasn't gone in there and thought, what would the club ask? He's gone in there and thought, I've got something I want to know the answer to. And we're getting, and by the way, that's kind of where we got with that, will fans get wet, right? Because he was talking to him like a mate and like a football fan. You know, it's only, you only get these geezers, you know, these keyboard warriors, you know what they're like, they go mental on the internet, you know this sort, you know this sort.
Chris ain't going to be able to get his head out the freaking ground now, you said that. Do you know what I mean? His head's going to be absolutely huge now.
But it was also shit at winding people up about transfers, right? And getting people wanting to chase him out of town for a contract extension. He totally done Paul Callanby up with that one, didn't he?
I felt bad because we said that. I felt bad for Paul because everyone thought, and then everyone was like, oh, fuck yeah, it's only Paul K signing a new contract, where everyone should have been going, oh, amazing, Paul K signing a new contract. Everyone was like,
I know. I think he knows that. But yeah, if his head gets too big, he should remember that.
Yeah.
But Mark, thank you so much for speaking to us about the formation of the Dons. And I know you are modest, but there are a number of people who, frankly, are living a really good life, going to the games on Saturday, catch up with people they want to do and having a beer. And whether you like it or not, you've played a very, very important part of that, as have we all. But I hope one day what you have done, you'll just sit with something red or something nice and just sit there and go, do you know what? Yeah, I did something all right. So thank you very much for sharing the stories. And yeah.
I think you've been spot on tonight with regards to, you said, like, take a step back and have a look at what has been achieved.
So look at Plough Lane. Look at some of the players that we have got, the Ayo Bassells, the McCormicks that we're getting from. George Marsh has been a revelation in the last few weeks. He's a player that's come from high pedigree at Spurs, and he's picked to play for Wimbledon, the Woodyards. The things that we have done throughout the last whatever years it is, it's I think that's the thing I need to do more, is take a step back and think, actually, this is an amazing, what we've got is an amazing, it's just amazing.
And I think we are. I think we do, Lee. I mean, the one thing I would say is that whether I think what we do on the pod is give an opinion of where we're feeling at a time, and we talk about the game. I think if anyone met us, or we came to our non-existent annual curry that we'll probably have this year, that when you cut through and actually speak to us, we are very like-minded. That's the reason why we're both probably, well, you it's your pod and I help you out. But we are very like-minded in terms of the way we've obviously viewed Wimbledon, what we view it as and what we'd like to see going forward. It's just on those match days, it is so frustrating, particularly with this group who I genuinely believe have got the ability, and again, I don't think we'll keep them all together, but I think we've got the ability to be slightly higher up and to be a bigger force than what we are on a Saturday. But as Mark said, maybe, you know, that's a cherry on the top, and it is right. You know, I go to Saturday, I go pie mash with my dad. I catch up with him about my brother in Australia and everything else. And then we go and watch a game of football. We chat about it for 10 minutes on the bus back. And then it's like, right, well, what are you doing in the week? It's sort of, it's lovely.
I will add, right, I will just sign off with this. It don't remove your right to go, we were shit today, right? You are allowed to not, you know, you ain't got to turn up and go, oh, it's so cool here, isn't it? Oh, look, we just got beat 6-0. Never mind, I've had a lovely pint of beer. We've all had a nice day, haven't we? You don't mean that, right? But what it does mean is just check your head, because it can be counterproductive if it spills over.
Yeah,
right? If the manager is thinking, like, I ain't going to have time to put this right. Because the one thing that was wrong about us, right, was we had no real plan. We had no strategy. We'd get a manager in, he'd get us to do something. He'd run out of ideas. We'd get rid of him and we'd start all over again. And I was saying this to a Sunderland fan on Saturday. You need to know what you're supposed to be doing. It shouldn't matter who the manager is. I like to think the next three managers are already at the club. When Robbo goes, it should be someone already working at the football club, right? It shouldn't just be, we're going to go, like Neil Harris is going to do a good job at Gillingham, right? He's going to come in, and they're going to look like a proper side, and he's going to get them to knuckle down a little bit, and they'll be a bit more accountable, right? But is that the grand scheme? What, for the next 20 years? Still Neil Harris goes somewhere else. Then they'll go again. Then they'll start over. Whereas what we're trying to do, what Mark's trying to achieve, is build something lasting so that when he ain't here, when I ain't here, when you ain't here, it's still the Wimbledon way. Because the bit that we all talk about, you know, when I go like Wimbledon play a certain sort of football, I'm talking about 1984. Do you know what I mean? That's how long we've had a certain way of doing things. And I think we are genuinely at the start of the next little chapter. The bit that would help is if we got a little bit more of an idea about how well the club think we're doing with it. I'd love to get Mark and say to him, how do you know we're on track? Yeah. What tells you we're on track?
What does it look like
in the next stage? Yeah, because I'm worried, right? That if we get two or three players that are decent and they go in the summer, do we go back to what we were at the beginning of this season? Are we constantly going to be starting over? I guess the argument will be the ones that don't go, so let's say Ayoub and Rudy went and Anthony stayed, you'd like to think that Anthony would be a better player next season, right? The more Mark works with them, the more they get what's going on. But that ain't a given, is it, right? Yeah, it's just a case of you give a player a 10-year deal and by year six he's amazing and he keeps getting better and better and better. Some people don't, do they?
We
need that comms, right? I know comms is a word thrown around easily by everybody, right? But what we need to do is we just need to keep reminding everybody, what's the master plan and are we doing all right?
Yeah.
And that's what that zooming out bit is, right? Let's zoom out on everything. Is that going all right? Is that going to plan? You know, like when the pub was a nightmare and it was like, and it weren't working, and then they said, we're getting it sorted. By the horns are coming in. They're going to sort the pub out. Mate, day one, it was better. Day two, it was better. That's all it is. You just got to keep, you've got to move in the same direction, but everybody needs to know why we're going in that direction. Then they'll do it, right?
Okay.
So yeah, it is great, but it don't mean you can't have a football opinion. It just don't let it turn into something you throw at someone and make it harder for them to do their job. That's all it is, isn't it?
And I think when Mark came out the other day, he was quite honest with his ratings. Off the pitch, 9. On the pitch, only a 5 at the moment. And me and Danny said that. I think it's spot on. And I think that's quite good. And it's what people like to hear. If he had come out and said, yeah, I think it's 9-9, everyone would look back and go, wait a minute, like, it's definitely not nine on the pitch at the moment. But yeah, no, Mark, again, I really appreciate you coming on and speaking to us. And yeah, thank you very much. And Danny?
Yeah, like I say, sorry, it was the mega issue, right? But you, like I said, you did get me on my specialist subject.
It's been an absolute pleasure. And Danny, this is a podcast for the fans, by the fans. Remember that.
I've always said that.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Wombles Had a Dream podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Wombles Dream and on Facebook at the Wombles Had a Dream. Get involved. By the fans, for the fans.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.